Previously in Aethon Kiss, written and read by Alice Dale, a year had passed and family discussion were all about how to dress in wartime for the two weddings. With difficulty, Pamela and Pippa convinced Craig to hire a full-dress kilt, and on the 24th of June, 1944, the double wedding took place. And now, in this final episode of Aethon Kiss, you are invited to the wedding reception, followed a year later by the VJ Day celebrations and Craig's surprise announcement.
Irene's 8-month-old baby, Josephine Philippa Margaret, slept through the whole wedding ceremony in John's proud arms and behaved perfectly throughout the festivities in the Melville room, where the caterers were waiting to make the celebrations complete. Auntie Margaret was overcome with mixed feelings. Delight that her name had been included in the baby's name. Happy for one bridal couple, Craig and Pamela. But thoroughly cross about the middle-aged bride, Pippa, being able to replace her irreplaceable brother. And in a non-Catholic church. That's the modern woman, I suppose. I don't think we should attend this wedding, she had sulked when they had received the invitation. But she changed her mind when Arthur was asked to give away the young bride. And her thoughts immediately turned to what she would wear, which only gave her another reason for complaint. The only outfit I have that's good enough for a wedding is the lovely black dress and jacket I wore to Stanley's funeral. And that would be an insult to him, me wearing it, when his wife, who made her vows to him, is marrying another man. Arthur seldom, if ever, contradicted his wife in any way. But since he was feeling rather proud at having been asked to give the bride away, he dared to say, her vow was to death do us part. And even you, Margaret, must agree that Stanley died 3 years ago. Unable for the first time ever to contradict him, she flounced out, pressing a hanky to her eyes, pretending she was in floods of tears, instead of the anger she was feeling. Then a thought occurred that pleased her. She decided that wearing black to a wedding was a good way of showing her disapproval. However, close to the big day, when she discovered Arthur would be dressed formally with a carnation in his buttonhole, she decided not to be left out. And as well as a flower in the buttonhole of her jacket, she added several flowers to her new hat. At the reception, she asked Craig, and where will you be living? I did ask your mother when I phoned, but someone came to the door and she had to go before she answered me. Knowing his mother's little trick, he smiled broadly. It's quite simple, Aunt Margaret. He even loved her today. After our honeymoons, he corrected himself, Mum moves in with David, and we're taking over Mum's house. It's worked out rather well. And where will you all go for your honeymoon? She asked coyly. Well, we're not all going together, if that's what you mean. He bent over to her ear, and her eyes lit up, thinking she would be the first to know. But he whispered, our destinations are a secret. 1 year later, VE Day, Victory in Europe, on the 8th of May 1945 created celebration enough, but VJ Day victory over Japan on the 20th of August meant the final end of the war, and everyone had a wonderful sense of freedom and hope in the future. There were parties everywhere that night, including in the streets. The young Stebbings and Mackies were no exception. Craig and Pamela had invited family and their best friends to a party at their house, where Pippa felt very much at home, having lived there throughout her first marriage and where she had raised her two children. All arrived with whatever drinks they had managed to secure. After one drink and loud toasts of victory, they all joined the street party, Irene holding Josie's hand tightly and Craig carrying the baby. It was a warm evening and doors and windows were open. No one bothered about noise that night, and music and laughter were emanating from every house and flat in Glasgow, in Britain for that matter. After an hour, Pippa suggested the young ones should continue to enjoy the street party, while she and David would happily return to the house and babysit for Irene's almost two-year-old daughter and Pamela and Craig's four-month-old son, Stanley Arthur David. The offer was gladly accepted. Craig's personal celebration still had to be shared, and he could hardly wait to tell them, but didn't want to detract in any way from the end-of-war festivities. Meanwhile, they sang and danced to the music being played by an assembly of local musicians who were making a very good attempt at sounding like a professional band, in spite of only getting together for the first time when the news broke earlier that day. The dancers had all joined up to do the conga, with the leader shouting, "One, two, three, kick! One, two, three, kick!" which everyone picked up and shouted loudly. Trying to make herself heard to Craig, who was behind, Pamela roared,
"We've been out nearly 2 hours since Pippa and David left with the children."
"What?"
"We've been out 2 hours. We'd better get back."
With great difficulty, they finally managed to convey this to the others, and forming their own conga line, they danced back to the house, where Pippa and David, even indoors, heard their laughter. After 6 years of habit, all the curtains had been closed, but at the sound of the returning family and friends, Pippa put down her glass with the determination of a judge using a gavel. "Oh, for goodness sake, what are we thinking about? We don't need to bother with the blackout anymore." And she rushed over to the window and threw the curtains back triumphantly. "Come here till you see this, David," she called, referring to the sight that met her eyes. All the family and friends dancing in a conga line, laughing and shouting. They all fell in the door, laughing uncontrollably, and one by one flopped into chairs or onto the couch. Smiling broadly, Pippa said, "I think lots of coffee is called for." And she was already leaving the room with David in her wake. When they returned, David was carrying the heavy tray laden with cups of coffee, milk, sugar, and all the biscuits they could find. By 2 a.m., having calmed down through sheer exhaustion, they all agreed it was time to wind up a wonderful night. But as everyone stood up to go, Craig stepped into the middle of the floor and held up his hand. "Before you go, there's something I'd like to share with you all. I had intended telling the family right away when I received the letter today," puzzled looks all round, "but I decided not to interfere with the VJ Day celebrations."
"Well, go on with it," urged Kevin. "What letter?"
"The letter telling me I've been accepted for training by BOAC, and because of my wartime experience, I should be flying passenger planes by the end of the year." Pamela was the first to rush over to him. Throwing her arms round her husband, she gave him a huge kiss before using one of the Scottish words she'd learned that amused her enormously.
Oh, you big idiot. Fancy not even telling me this morning. If I'd gone into the hall to pick up the mail instead of you, you wouldn't have got away with this.
She planted another enormous kiss on his lips. The whole room shouted their congratulations, and Steve sang, "For he's a jolly good fellow. Everyone joined in, and the party started all over again.
And so say all of us, and so say all of us, and so say all of us, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow."
So ends A Fond Kiss. Written and narrated by Alice Dale. You heard characters in the story played by Jenny Davis, OAM, Bernie Davis, Sandra Sando, Rick Herder and Tony Howes. The soundscape was created and produced by Edo Brands. The singing voices heard were those of Kenneth McKellar and Max Kay. Technical production was by Edo Brands. Executive producer was Anthony Howes. A Fond Kiss by Alice Dale was produced for radio in Perth, Western Australia by Capital Radio Productions.